now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I will continue a discussion last week about the nuclear weapons are fake meme. I have a lot more information to share. I just didn't have time to share it last week, which will dovetail into Stuxnet, the Israeli NSA-made computer malware, actually that manipulates hardened components, not just computers, and the fact that Stuxnets, for all intents and purposes, is a form of artificial intelligence. And always remember that Stuxnet was designed to cripple the Iranian nuclear weapons program. Okay? Because we need to delve into this whole concept of nuclear weapons are a hoax. Because to say that nuclear weapons are a hoax is tantamount to saying that Stuxnet never happened, that there would have been no need to create Stuxnet, which contaminated countless computers and systems around the world, because Stuxnet was designed particularly for the Iranian nuclear weapons program they're alleged to have at Natanz, Iran. Okay, there was some issues that I needed to bring up last week that I didn't have a chance to bring up as far as the nuclear weapons are a hoax meme. One of them is the fact that there are zones of death around certain nuclear weapons establishments. Hanford, where they produce the plutonium-239, Hanford, Washington, there is a zone. I'm not laughing, you know, about what's happened. I'm just laughing at the absurdity that some would say that nuclear weapons don't exist, because there is a zone of death, a cancer zone of death, around the Hanford plutonium weapons plant. They don't actually build the weapons there. It's a misnomer, actually. What they do is they create the weapons-grade plutonium-239 there. Hanford has since been decommissioned, but the radioactivity, the illnesses, the death still linger. And there has been a high incidence of cancer around that whole area. There's a book called Atomic Harvest that you can read about details of Hanford. And Hanford is by no means unique. There are similar zones of death around places like Rocky Flats, Colorado, other places around the U.S. and around the world where these nuclear fissionable weapons-grade isotopes are created. And an unavoidable consequence, well, I'm sure if they really wanted to come up with a way, they could make it safe for the environment, but the environmental safety is like not even on their list of things to do. And I knew a gal who came from not too far from Hanford. She was a radio woman I had worked with when I worked for communications for Naval Air Force's U.S. Pacific Fleet. This gal came from the Tri-Cities area of Washington State, south of Hanford. And she was living a fine life. She was a line dancer, a very tall gal, very outspoken, spoke her mind, you know, within the confines of being plugged into the matrix the way she was. You know, like most active duty military people. But within that context, she was pretty outspoken, true Sagittarian. And she did line dancing. She was really into country and Western music. She used to go to East County, San Diego, like the El Cajon area, places like that, where they had country and Western bars. and she would do the line dancing and all that kind of stuff. And the radio men and radio women were supposed to leave the TV turned on to fake news, i.e. CNN, 24/7. But when it was this gal's turn to do her watch, as they say in the Navy, I think it was a 12-hour shift or something like that, in the message center, she would turn the TV on to the country and music, country and Western music video channel. And I'd be in there, and she would be doing all these country and Western steps and all this other stuff. She was really into it. Nice gal. I liked her. Very outspoken and very good worker. When I was going through the throes of the alien love bite, the gal that I was smitten with was a Sagittarian. So I was asking this gal, this radio woman, all these questions about Sagittarian women and what makes them tick, etc., etc. And she gave me a lot of valuable intel, which really helped me, I must say. And for that, I was always, still to this day, grateful to her. And next thing you know, I don't see her for a while. About a couple of weeks. And then she comes back and she's in a wheelchair, right? And needless to say, she wasn't there to work. She was there just to visit and, you know, let us know what's going on with her. Turns out she was born with a congenital heart defect. She had a hole the size of her fist in her heart, which she was born with, which no one had detected up until, well, just the last couple of weeks when things kind of went haywire for her. And I remembered that she mentioned to me when we first met that she was from Washington State. And I asked her, well, where are you from? You know, just kind of in an aside. So does this mean you're going back home or, you know, where are you going after this? And she said, yeah, she's going back up to Richland. Richland is in the tri-states area of Washington State, near Pasco. You Washington State folks know what I'm talking about. That's, as the crow flies, that's only about like 43 miles south of Hanford, right? So what we're talking about is someone who grew up not too far from the Hanford Nuclear Plutonium Processing Facility. And they weren't even within the zone of death, you know, right around Hanford. They were just south of it. And then they were born with this defect, right? A hole the size of her fist in her heart, which the problems associated with it did not even manifest until she was in her mid to late 20s, right? And so, well, what do we make of that? Do we just wave our magic wand and say, oh, that's a Zionist Jewish hoax? This big gal that was over, you know, 5'11", 6 feet tall, that would be doing line dancing and, you know, strutting her stuff in the radio room when it was her shift, you know, cranking out the country and Western music videos. And then on her off-duty nights, she would strut her stuff at the East County country and Western bars, doing all this line dancing and all this other stuff. She was really into it. And to go from there, she was into physical fitness too. And to go from that to being like haggard, frail, relegated to a wheelchair, needing breathing tubes stuck up her nose. I like this gal too. I thought it was very sad, really. Because this is an example of how it all comes home, where it's no longer a theoretical thing. Well, I could read a book like Atomic Harvest. The full title of the book is Atomic Harvest, Hanford and the Lethal Toll of America's Nuclear Arsenal by Michael D'Antonio. And he also wrote another very good book called The State Boys Rebellion, about the Fernand State Boys prison is what it amounted to, where all these young boys went into rebellion mode, took the place over because they were being systematically abused, sodomized, raped by the staff The Guards, what have you. Another very good book, The State Boys Rebellion by Michael D'Antonio. Point of relevance is Michael D'Antonio wrote Atomic Harvest, Hanford, and the Lethal Toll of America's Nuclear Arsenal. And again, Hanford is just one of a number of places, but you know, here was this gal I knew, who I worked with, who I'd known for some time. Usually they're posted to these places, these duty assignments, so I can't really remember how long. Usually a couple of years thereabouts, year and a half, 2 years, maybe more. Can't really remember. But I got to know her pretty well because, you know, I'm always interested in people. I'm interested where they're from, you know, what they're into. Because I'm kind of a people person. I'm just fascinated in the process of human consciousness, human awareness, interpersonal relationships, etc., etc. And it was very sad to, you know, just watch what happened to this gal because of this fake nuclear weapons program that, you know, resulted in her having a hole the size of her fist in her heart, which had gone undetected all of her life until whammo, she gets hit by it. And she lived not too far away from Hanford. So I can only speculate that her one or both of her parents had become contaminated and then due to some kind of genetic mutation wrought by the radioactivity, the beta emitters, etc., neutrons and the gamma radiation, etc., etc., this genetic mutation was passed down to her, and she was born with a hole the size of her fist in her heart, okay? So that's just one example, folks. There are countless others. There are other key issues to bring up this nuclear weapons are a hoax meme. There is the thorny issue of Trinitite. Trinitite, so-called, because in the aftermath of the Trinity explosion in, when was it, July 16th, 1945, if memory serves, don't quote me on that, when they set off the plutonium Fat Man device in the desert, and as a result, the area surrounding the blast, the soil was fused into this green glass substance, hence the name Trinitite. The problem with that is this green glass substance has been found at different strata layers around the world, in the Gobi Desert, in India, in the Middle East, in the Southern California, Nevada desert near Death Valley, and which is interesting because there's a book out there. I can't remember the title of it. I've got it written down somewhere. I read it, Winter Song. I can't remember what it was, but it's a story of a gal who remembers a past life as an ET, and in the southwestern desert of the U.S., in the modern day United States of America, she remembers a war between different ET races in the southwestern desert, what became the southwestern desert of the U.S. Back then, it was verdant, it was green, pretty vegetated, as far as like vegetation is concerned. And then this nuclear or thermonuclear war happens, and it reduced the southwest into what it is today, a big desert, okay? So, interesting that these investigators, geologists, scientists, etc., have found evidence in near Death Valley and near the Nevada border of evidence that sometime in the past some catastrophe had occurred, which vitrified the soil and fused rocks, etc., etc. Okay, so that's another place. Then we have India, ancient India, the Gobi Desert. And some of the imagery of the great, former great website, Mars Mars Anomalies Research website by Joseph P. Skippers, there was overhead imagery of Antarctica, which showed a huge, humongous field of green glass. What looked like green glass. Some of you have heard me talk about this before. Here's another thing, and this is also very significant and germane to our discussion. Dr. John Brandenburg wrote a paper, Evidence for a Large Anomalous Nuclear Explosions in Mars Past. He also wrote a book, and the book is called Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre. I don't know why I'm laughing, but anyway, it's called Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre, which I will read as soon as I can get a copy of it. And his information is quite startling. A byproduct of a thermonuclear explosion is xenon-129. Another byproduct is argon-40, which is consistent with a large neutron flux on Martian soil. Uranium, thorium, there's other isotopes and elements which are abundant in certain parts of Mars, which are consistent with a large thermonuclear explosion. Let me read an excerpt from one of Dr. Brandenburg's papers. Mars xenon is found to match closely the component in the Earth's atmosphere produced by Earth's nuclear weapons programs, both hydrogen bomb testing and plutonium production, both of which involve large amounts of fission with fast neutrons. It is found that Mars xenon can be approximately by a mixture of 70% nuclear testing xenon mixed with 30% natural Earth xenon, suggesting that Mars xenon was similar to Earth's before a large nuclear event altered it dramatically. Boy howdy. At least a couple of these nuclear detonations occurred near the Cydonia region of Mars. Go figure. That's where the pyramids are, at least that they've imaged thus far, or let us see, and also the face on Mars. So the nuclear explosions of all places happen in the Cydonia region. And again, I'll read from the paper written by Dr. Brandenburg. Hypothesis: Mars suffered explosion of large thermonuclear weapon with fusion plus fission over Mare Acidalium, that's a region on Mars, and possibly a smaller one over Utopia Planum. Both had mixed uranium-thorium casing and deuterium-thorium secondary. DT secondary. I'm guessing the initial DT stands for thorium, but I may be wrong. And he has a bunch of charts and whatnot and a bunch of equations. You really have to check it out. I will include the link to this scientific paper on this commentary. So what do we make of that? That's a conundrum as far as the lamestream would have us believe. Now, who is Dr. Brandenburg? He's a PhD in theoretical plasma physics from the University of California at Davis. And currently he did work as a plasma physicist at Orbital Technologies in Madison, Wisconsin. He has worked in a variety of propulsion technologies and previously was an independent consultant on space missile defense and directed energy weapons. Dr. Brandenburg has authored a number of books, with his latest being Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre. And what do we make of that? Right? Just, we'll provide the links to some of his papers and some of his books so you could check this out yourself. I guess the Martians were taken in by this nuclear weapons or hoax beam as well. Because not only do we have evidence of nuclear weapons going off in ancient times on Earth, modern day Iraq, India, Death Valley, the Gobi Desert, and more recently, the Trinity site, Lop Nor in China, in other places where nuclear blasts have been detonated, we have this trinite, or the green glass, trinite, whatever it's called, the green glass, which is a hallmark and byproduct of nuclear weapons explosions. Basically, what happened is the soil, the sand, gets fused by intense heat and turns into a green glass. And again, I mentioned earlier, there was a large green glass field, a humongous green glass field taken by overhead imagery over Antarctica. And large parts of that image were smudged out, but you can still see considerable stretches of the Earth in Antarctica where this big green glass was. So, nuclear explosions on Mars, evidence for nuclear explosions in ancient times on Earth, and also very ancient times, if we take at face value what some of the ancient Hindu texts tell us, the Mahabharata, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Mahabharata, and let me read something which I found on ufoevidence.org, and I used to have the Mahabharata, but after all these different migrations, I lost my copy. Bummers. Accepting India's historical epic, the Mahabharata, at face value, descriptions of what happened to the site are reminiscent of the destruction wrought by modern weapons in 1945. Quote, a single projectile charged with all the power of the universe, an incandescent column of smoke and flame, as bright as the thousand suns, rose in all its splendor. It was an unknown weapon, an iron thunderbolt, a gigantic messenger of death, which reduced to ashes the entire race of the Vrishnis and the Andakas. The corpses were so burned as to be unrecognizable. The hair and nails fell out, okay? Suggests radiation poisoning. Pottery broke without apparent cause, and the birds burned white. After a few hours, all foodstuffs were infected. Again, indicative of radiation poisoning, radiation contamination. To escape from this fire, the soldiers threw themselves in streams. This is what they did in Hiroshima. The people that were near the water there, and near the river that ran through the middle of Hiroshima, jumped into the river to wash themselves and their equipment. End quote. And it goes on to say the article, not only is this description of destruction identical to that at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which the fake nuclear weapons types are saying was due to firebombing, which is ridiculous because firebombing back then required hundreds of B-29 superfortresses, but the survivors of those explosions also threw themselves into the water to try and ease the burning. The A-bomb's inventor, Dr. Robert Oppenheimer, famous for his familiarity with ancient Sanskrit literature, was asked 7 years after Alamogordo, i.e. the Trinity test site, July 16, 1945, if memory serves, by a Rochester University interviewer whether that had been the first atomic detonation in the world. And he replied, well, yes, in modern history. Very quixotic, curious statement. Well, yes, in modern history. After the first atomic test, Oppenheimer quoted the Bhagavad Gita, now I've become death, the destroyer of worlds. He later added, I suppose we all felt that way. Well, he would have known because of his readings of the Mahabharata, the Rig Veda, the Bhagavad Gita, etc., that these kinds of weapons were utilized in ancient times. And here's another thing, I'm continuing to read this article, but it's germane for our purposes here. Other cities and sites of antiquity and the substantial apparent impact damage on many of Mars' surface structures would lend credence to the biblical, quote-unquote, war in the heavens, unquote. These include an extremely dramatic hole, 1,000 feet in diameter in Sidonia's D&M pyramid, with structural and surface damage and debris looking very much like it was caused by explosive penetration. Numerous mid-air explosions, usually attributed to meteorites destroyed by the atmosphere, also have left their mark on the surface of Mars. Now, there's also been radioactive isotopes and indicators suggesting nuclear weapons being utilized on the moon. So, you know, the southwestern desert of the United States, not always a southwestern desert, may have been more lush and verdant in the past, and then suddenly nuclear warfare erupts between two or more ET races, renders that whole area into a large desert. And then we have the findings of certain investigators and scientists that show that indeed large parts of the Southwest seem to have been hit by some kind of catastrophe, which fused the soil, fused the rocks. And then we have places like the Sinai, modern-day Israel, the Gobi Desert, Pakistan, and India. In the subcontinent, there are large areas that are vitrified. Green glass again. So this nuclear hoax thing goes back a long, long time. Somebody was fooling the ancients and killing them and wiping them out in huge numbers in the process and making them think that what was going on was a hoax. So I'm not trying to make light of the situation. I'm just pointing out the absurdity of the argument. And then let's talk about more recent times. And this is where it verges into artificial intelligence. The Stuxnet virus. Malware. And understand that the Israelis, in collusion with the CIA and NSA, basically wholly owned subsidiaries of the former anyway, they created what became known as the Stuxnet virus. Now, what does Stuxnet do? Well, it's important to understand how malware works. There's two distinct aspects to it, the dropper and the payload. The dropper works its way onto an infected computer system, and the payload is what is released. Now, according to Ralph Langner, a German computer expert who studied Stuxnet, and also the work done by the people over at Symantec, who make the Norton computer protection software, they found out some interesting things about Stuxnet. Stuxnet doesn't really mess with computers. What Stuxnet does is it uses computer systems to look for hardware, and in particular, it looks for programmable logic controllers. Programmable logic controllers control everything that we think of in the modern world, transportation systems, bridges, railway lines, electric power grids, waste processing plants, nuclear energy plants, and components for naval vessels and civilian vessels. Basically, these programmable logic controllers, PLCs, it's a box that has programmed into it by the designers certain regulatory safety features, certain parameters that prevent the system that it's controlling from getting out of whack, getting out of control. What Stuxnet does is it looks for these programmable logic controllers, infects them, takes them over, and then makes it seem to the people monitoring the computer screens for, you know, security purposes, seeing if everything is running the way it should. It'll send a false signal to the maintenance people that are watching the computer screens to make them think everything is hunky-dory, everything is working properly. But in reality, what Stuxnet is doing is changing the programming. And in the case of the centrifuge cascades in the underground base at Iran, idea was to make the centrifuges spin faster than they normally do to create basically an explosion of the centrifuges with the uranium hexafluoride gas inside of it. Because what they're doing is they're spinning the uranium hexafluoride gas at a very high rate. It's a form of isotope separation. They want to separate the uranium-238, which is far more plentiful, from the uranium-235. When they obtain enough of it, something like 75 to 80% enriched nuclear fuel, then they can create a nuclear weapon with it. And what they do is they daisy chain thousands of centrifuges, connect them into what's called cascades. Now stop and think about this. Stuxnet was not taking over PCs so much, or computers, or operating systems. They were taking over hardware. This is like Skynet attaining consciousness or something. Excuse me. And so it removed the safety parameters for the centrifuges, made them spin at a much higher rate than normal. And Stuxnet was supposed to never be found out. What happened was the Israelis made a deal with the CIA and the NSA that they would not launch Stuxnet until the Americans agreed to a time to do so. The Israelis double-crossed the Americans, so what else is new? And they went ahead and they created an even more potent version of Stuxnet and launched it at the Natanz Iranian facility, apparently, so the story goes, beneath the above-ground internationally approved nuclear enrichment plant on the surface. There is an underground plant beneath it where the Iranians were enriching uranium with these centrifuges, eventually to weapons-grade or bomb-grade status. And initially, when it was deployed, the Stuxnet would have disabled hundreds of the, if not thousands, of the centrifuges over time. They would just keep spinning, blow up, and, you know, probably contaminate the hell out of the place. And the Israelis felt this would slow down production. Now, because they made a version of Stuxnet that was basically on steroids, it started sending red flags up to the Iranians, where all these centrifuges started going. Instead of spread out over time, like what the Americans had in mind, all these centrifuges started going all over the place. And it set up red flags. The Iranians contacted one of their contractors in Belarus, and they sent over all the computer codes and the computer information. And the people, the contractor in Belarus, they determined that some kind of malware was applied. Now, it must be understood, if this was applied to an underground base, what the Iranians would have done is make it air-sealed. In other words, there would have been no connections whatsoever to the outside world and to the underground base, precisely to avoid these kinds of cyber attacks. So what the Israelis must have done is they must have gotten access to the laptops of and or the USB sticks of contractors, technicians, and engineers who go in and out of this underground facility. Okay, so they may have contaminated laptops, they may have contaminated USB sticks, replaced USB sticks with others that are loaded with the Stuxnet malware, whatever the case may be, and that's how they were able to get the Stuxnet into the underground facility, and then pretty soon the centrifuges started going haywire. Now the Americans, once this got out, because it then began contaminating all these control systems all over the place, all over the world, but mostly it was concentrated in Iran, which was another red flag. What the Americans did at Fort Meade, NSA headquarters, was they daisy-chained dozens of centrifuges, and they contaminated the control system, the programmable logic controller for the centrifuges. And then what happened was the centrifuges began spinning, and they blew up. They went beyond the safety parameters. They also did a smaller, kind of more simple experiment. They created a machine, or they took a machine, that blows up balloons, puts in only so much air, and then stops. So that way the balloon doesn't get, you know, blown up. But what Stuxnet did was, once it contaminated a very simple machine designed to blow air into balloons, once Stuxnet's got a hold of it, Stuxnet, it started blowing up all these balloons. They filled up with too much air. Now think of the implications of this, where Stuxnet was all over the place, all over the world. Ironically, after a while, the American government and American agencies, American industry, started having a deal with Stuxnet because it had gotten out all over the place. Again, Stuxnet doesn't mess up the computers. What it does is it goes looking for these programmable logic controllers that control the railway switching lines, that control, electricity grids and whatnot. In this case, the Stuxnet was programmed specifically for the cascades of centrifuges beneath the Natanz above ground, legal, perfectly legal. It's the Iranians are signatories to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Indeed, they got their nuclear reactors from the Americans, from Western corporations. They got their technicians were trained by Americans. Their nuclear engineers were trained by Americans, and they had an ongoing program for many years where the Iranians were sending over their nuclear engineers to Los Alamos to be trained and would send them to Los Alamos for symposiums and whatnot, right? It was no problem then. It was certainly no problem when the Shah was the pedophile dictator of Iran. But, of course, then they do a 180 and do a flip-flop, and suddenly Iran's the big enemy nowadays. Now, what we're talking about is basically artificial intelligence, and I'm sure by now they have things that are even more potent than Stuxnet. These Stuxnet malware programs inject rogue codes into the programmable logic controllers. They inject rogue codes to take over the hardware. That's very much like Skynet attaining consciousness, right? And so, why would the Israelis create the Stuxnet virus if nuclear weapons did not exist? And here's another thing to consider, too. It became public knowledge in November 2010 from a lot of these computer experts and security, cybersecurity experts, that yes, Stuxnet, I don't know how they came across that name or how they decided to call it Stuxnet, but for our purposes, they announced that they're dealing with something called Stuxnet, and it's very real. And they also said it was deliberately used to target the Iranian centrifuges in their nuclear research facility. Right? Now look at the timeline, look at the timing. Cybersecurity experts announced in November 10, 2010, about the Stuxnet virus and how it's been used to target what the Israelis perceive to be and what the CIA and NSA perceive to be is a secret Iranian nuclear weapons program. And as far as I'm concerned, the Iranians developing nuclear weapons is not going to make the rest of the world any more unstable than it already is, right? The Iranians are not the ones going around invading everybody and dropping nukes on everybody and turning jihadists loose all over the place. They're not the ones doing that, okay? So I personally have no qualms if the Iranians want to build nukes to defend themselves, right? After all these other countries have already got the nuclear weapons, I don't see that as a problem. Why should certain countries have nukes but other countries are not allowed to, right? Racism. There, I'm going to hurl it back at them, right? Because the cultural Marxists are the ones that are always using race to divide everyone else. Okay, now back to the timeline. November 2010, cybersecurity experts announced Stuxnet is real. They're trying to deal with it, and it was used to target the alleged Iranian nuclear weapons program. In 2011, a mere few months later, in 2011, the first very large fake nuclear weapons websites went online in 2011, claiming that nuclear weapons was all a Jewish hoax. Get this. One of the main players behind the nuclear weapons are a hoax is a guy named Eric Dubay. Now, where have you heard that name from? Eric Dubay is the same guy who pushes the flat earth meme. When I found out that Eric Dubé, the guy who pushes the flat earth meme, and oh, according to Eric Dubé, the reason why people think the world is round is because the Jews want us to think the world is round when the world is really flat, okay? So he's using the same argument, re the flat earth, fake nuclear weapons meme, it's all a Jewish hoax. When I found that Eric Dubé, the flat earth guy, is the same guy, or one of the same guys, pushing the nuclear weapons or hoaxes meme, and he's using the excuse of the Jews being behind it all, my reaction was, really? Oh, the same guy who's pushing the flat earth meme and saying the Jews are behind it is the same guy pushing the nuclear weapons or a hoax meme and the Jews are behind that? Oh, and get this. Here's a bit of reverse psychology for you. There's since been a lot of very good documentaries out there. The Greatest Story Never Told about Adolf Hitler. There's real history from real historians like David Irving, although David Irving would probably be, you know, aghast to be referred to as a historian, since historians are so fake nowadays and have been for some time. But if you want to get real information about Germany, about what really happened before, during, and after World War II, read David Irving. Don't read Eric Dubé. See, because what Eric Dubé is doing by saying that, oh, Adolf Hitler was really a nice guy, the Jews are behind this, the Jews are behind that, do you see that's reverse psychology again, right? How many people that are flat earthers know that the same guy that pushes flat earth is also the same guy who puts forth the nuclear weapons or a hoax meme is the same guy who says Adolf Hitler is a nice guy? Now, there, like I said, there's a lot of very good scholarship showing that Adolf Hitler been the most demonized person in history. And the things he said are essentially no different from what a lot of the critics for the Federal Reserve Act said. Louis McFadden, congressman, vehemently opposed to the Federal Reserve Act. And Charles Lindbergh Sr., a vocal critic of the Federal Reserve Act, vocal critic of the tribalist collectivists behind it. Henry Ford, another vociferous critic of the Federal Reserve and the tribalist collectivists. And then you look at the comments made by people like General Ulysses S. Grant, who later became a president of the United States. His former colleague in the military, General William Tecumseh Sherman, the things they said about the tribalist collectivists. Essentially no different than what Hitler said, quite frankly. They said the exact same things Hitler did, right? The difference was Hitler was the leader of an industrialized country that said, no, we're going to rearm. We're tired of all this BS, right? We're not paying these reparations anymore. We're tired of our ethnic Germans being persecuted and murdered in places like Silesia and the Danzig Corridor and Alsace-Lorraine, etc., etc., etc. And along comes Eric Dubé saying, oh, he's a good guy. The earth is flat. Nuclear weapons aren't real. And the Jews are behind it all, right? So what they're trying to do is they're trying also with this Eric Dubé guy to squelch all this research into what really happened prior to, during, and after World War II, right? Think about that. Back to Stuxnet. I'm sure by now there are far more powerful, smarter versions of Stuxnet. I keep mispronouncing it. Stuxnet. And if what we saw with Stuxnet was an example of the potential of these artificially intelligent computer software malware, hardware disruptors, let's say. Geez, I wonder what they're going to be like in the future. Because as I pointed out, Stuxnet went after hardware. It went after hardened control devices. That's how smart this thing is. And it's thoroughly weaponized. It's been proven to work. Veterans Today website claims they were slimed by the Stuxnet virus in the recent past when they were exposing things, or so they claim. Maybe, maybe not. We have to look at what's happened with Stuxnet as the opening of a genie bottle. We know that these versions of computer malware are out there, and the ones that are not out there yet, at any moment they can be deployed and cause all kinds of havoc. Shut down grids, wreak havoc with railway systems, wreak havoc with, you name it, because of those box devices, the programmable logic controllers, just about everything, every form of machinery out there, everything on a big scale that runs things, grids, infrastructure, is controlled by those programmable logic controllers, and Stuxnet has proven that it could take it over. And like I said, Stuxnet was not meant to be found out about. It was only because the Israelis made a super strong version of it, which is why they were found out, and because most of the Stuxnet attacks happen in one country, Iran. Red flag right there. We need to put all of this in perspective. Oh, another thing also about the Trinitite, the green glass, which showed up after, or has shown up after nuclear airburst. According to the aforementioned physicist, plasma physicist, the guy who wrote that book about nukes going off in Mars, if the media reports, mainstream media reports about him are correct, they found Trinitite, or evidence of Trinitite, the green glass, on Mars, around the Cydonia region, which I mentioned before. Okay, so nuclear weapons are very real. To say that nuclear weapons don't exist is tantamount to saying that nuclear power, nuclear energy doesn't exist. That would have to be one hell of a hoax, because they've managed to fool all these people in these nuclear-powered submarines. These nuclear-powered submarines don't need to surface and recharge their batteries like the old-style World War II submarines. But these modern-day fast attack boats, hunter-killer submarines, which the Americans use to track down Russian nuclear ballistic missile submarines, i.e. the Boomers, and as well as the SSBNs, the American Nuclear Submarine Launch Missile submarines, these are nuclear powered. They could stay underwater for a long, long time. They could operate independently. All they really need is replenishment, food, stores, more ordnance if they need it, a breathable atmosphere. So if nuclear energy is a hoax, it's like they've managed to fool all these, must be some massive placebo effect, like they give all the submariners in A school, okay, you're all going to be working in submarines, take this placebo, and you'll all believe that you're in a nuclear-powered submarine and staying underwater for the entire duration of your cruise. It's, I don't even know where else to go with this whole nuclear weapons are a hoax thing. Now, I'm a little biased, I must admit. But, and I'm sure that there are other podcasters and other radio show hosts who have, at the moment anyway, a far larger audience than I do, although I seriously doubt in the short amount of time the switch has been working, that they've had as many attacks on us, on their sites, as we have. I've been locked out of my YouTube account. I've been had to watch as all these mass, multiple brute force attacks are meted out to our website, on and on and on, right? But our listeners are still loyal. My listeners are really switched on. And all I got to do is read some of the comments some of these people send us. One of them pointed out that Stanislav Lunev wrote a book about Soviet Spetsnaz capabilities. I happen to have read the same book. The guy's absolutely right. According to Lunev, GRU and Spetsnaz has planted all kinds of, I don't know why I'm laughing again, I guess it's nervous laughter, planted all kinds of small atomic demolition munitions all over the place, including in the U.S., Who's to say that he's wrong about that? I mean, I started off this whole topic last week talking about how, in all likelihood, the Bali bombing was a small nuke, right? But think about it. They get all these people to believe nukes don't exist. Meanwhile, there's nuclear weapons all over the place. They're on board airplanes. They're on board naval vessels. They're in hardened missile silos. They're being transported all over the place by underground rail and underground trains and even surface above ground surface means of transportation. They're all over the place, including these mini nukes. Not too long after Stuxnet becomes widely known on even lamestream media, suddenly all these websites pop up about how nuclear weapons are a hoax. Because I guess the reasoning is, or the logic is, if you want to call it that, since nuclear weapons are a hoax, that means that Stuxnet is a hoax too. And Stuxnet was never launched, despite what all these people have reported, all these cybersecurity people. And it just goes on and on and on from there. And the person who says it is making a point of being known as a virulent, frothing-at-the-mouth, anti-Semitic individual. Go figure. Right? Food for thought. We have to ask ourselves, why is there so much effort being made for us to believe in a flat earth and also believe that nuclear weapons don't exist? So anyhow, that's this week's segment of Bartley's commentaries on the cosmic wars. And we will be here next week and we'll come up with a whole nother range of topics I'm sure you'll be interested in. So all my listeners out there, wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, have a very pleasant time.